As everyone will know, the 17th of March is a very significant day in Ireland and in other places. And you will say, of course, that's because it is St. Patrick's Day. But I remember, and Free Presbyterians worldwide remember the 17th of March for an entirely different reason. We read today in our Bible reading in Psalm 126 at the beginning of our service, where it says in verse 3, "The Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad." Here you have the people of God looking back in retrospect upon what the Lord has done for them in the past. We also then read from 1 Samuel chapter 7. And in that passage, there is an event that is very significant, where Samuel the prophet took a sucking lamb, offered it for a burnt offering holy unto the Lord, and he went to the Lord in prayer. He cried unto the Lord for Israel, teaching us that we must draw near to the Lord on the ground of sacrifice, even the precious blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. That is the ground of our praying. The Bible says that the Lord heard his prayer, and as he was offering up the burnt offering, the enemies of the Lord, the Philistines, they drew near to battle against Israel, but the Lord dealt with them. The Lord thundered with a great thunder on that day upon the Philistines and discomfited them, and they were smitten before Israel. And as an acknowledgement of God's mercy to them, Samuel took a stone, it says in verse 12 of 1 Samuel 7, and he set it between Mizpah and Shen, and called the name of it Ebenezer, which literally means stone of help, saying, "Hitherto hath the Lord helped us." You could say today, up until this point, hath the Lord helped us. As I say, the 17th of March is a very significant date in Free Presbyterianism. It's a significant date in the history of the mother denomination of which we are a part in the Free Presbyterian Church of North America. We have had a separate presbytery since 2005. When I say separate, that's a rather elastic term because we are very much joined to the parent denomination. We have full fraternal relations with the church, and I, along with some other ministers, have not a dual citizenship per se, but a dual membership of two presbyteries, the one in Ulster and the one here in North America. So our relationship is very, very close. St. Patrick's Day, as I say, is not normally associated in the minds of most people with Protestantism or Protestant churches. But on the 17th of March, 1951, 70 years ago this coming Wednesday, St. Patrick's Day, the Free Presbyterian Church of Ulster was born. Now, for those uninitiated, perhaps watching online, they may say, "What does Ulster mean?" Well, I don't want to give you a whole history lesson about Ireland, but there used to be four provinces. There actually still are four separate provinces, four places that are known as Ulster, Munster, Connaught, and Leinster. And in those four jurisdictions, the fourth one, Ulster, was composed of nine counties. And the nine counties became six in 1921 under a tripartite agreement that was lodged with the League of Nations, and Northern Ireland retained its position in the United Kingdom along with England, Scotland, and Wales. But the rest of Ireland seceded to become what was known as the Irish Free State and then the Republic of Ireland as it is to this day. Now, Ulster is a name that has been kept by Northern Irish Protestants. Even though we lost three of the counties, yet we still retain the name Ulster as an alternate name to Northern Ireland. And so you'll find that many Protestants like me prefer to be called Ulster men rather than Irish men. And if you don't know the reason for that, I'll share it with you later on. But the Free Presbyterian Church of Ulster is the denomination that was born on the 17th of March. So our mother denomination actually has its 70th birthday this week. And I wanted to mark the occasion. I think it's right that we do so. Because we have, even in this church in North America, a godly heritage. We have a legacy that has been given to us by men of God. The 17th of March is the 70th anniversary of the founding of the Mother Church, so to speak. And so this is a very special day upcoming in our history. What I want to do in today's messages is to concentrate upon the 70 years of the history of the Free Presbyterian Church. Now, what I want to do today is not to exalt a church. That is, I don't want to preach denominationalism. We know that denominations come and go. There are a multiplicity of different churches with different labels. Many that are evangelical, many that are gospel preaching. And we would never want anyone to think that the Free Presbyterian Church, whether it be in Ulster, in Nepal, in Australia, or in North America, is anything more than just a branch of the Church of Jesus Christ. Our church does not in itself form the Church of Jesus Christ. It doesn't begin and end where our doors open and shut. But nonetheless, we are part of the Church of Jesus Christ. And the Lord has given to us a particular ministry. Now, I don't want to blow my own horn this morning. I certainly am not in the business of doing that. But I do have a very singular privilege that I'm very, very happy about. And that is that I was the first minister to be ordained into the denomination in Ulster who was born into the church. There have been several since, and I could mention their names today, but I was the first one, and I count that a great privilege. But there's a legacy in the Free Church that we really ought to consider and think about as Free Presbyterians in this day. And the reason that we look back on history, the reason that we should look back on history, is that we might learn lessons that we can put into practice today and in the future. In the case of Samuel, in 1 Samuel chapter 7, he wanted to physically mark the occasion when the Lord had intervened on behalf of his people against the Philistines. And so he took a large stone, he set it up in a prominent place, and he called it the Stone of Help. And it was a monument that would stand for generations, that would be an indication to the people, the Lord helped us. Up to this point, hitherto, hath the Lord helped us. The Lord has done great things for us. And now, at this particular juncture, the 70th anniversary of the Free Presbyterian Church's founding, we ought to acknowledge that again. The goodness of the Lord to us. Now, this morning, I've got a couple of very simple points to pass on to you. There may be some information that you're already privy to, other things that you've not heard before. But whatever, I trust that the Lord will speak to our hearts and will give us fresh vision in the free church for the days that lie ahead in the will of God. I want to speak, first of all, today about the Free Presbyterian Church and its origin. We need to remember the years that have gone into eternity now by, first of all, considering the very beginning of the witness within Northern Ireland. As was the case with the nation of Israel, so it has been with the Free Presbyterian Church. Way back in the book of Deuteronomy, in the chapter 7 and verses 7 and 8, the Lord said to his people Israel, "The Lord did not set his love upon you nor choose you because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people, but because the Lord loved you." And as was the case with Israel there, so it is true with every believer. It is the goodness of the Lord. It is the love of God for us that has allowed us to be part of a witness such as this. The people of Israel were a redeemed people. They were a special people because the Lord loved them and the Lord redeemed them. The Free Presbyterian Church in Ulster began because of a redeemed people. People who were saved, who had been separated unto the Lord, and who subsequently left what they considered to be a position of bondage. In a small mission hall in the town of Crossgar, County Down, Northern Ireland, on Saturday, the 17th of March, 1951, the Free Presbyterian Church was officially formed. It was constituted that day as one small congregation in a borrowed hall. They didn't even own the building. It was constituted with five elders by a young preacher who was just short of his 25th birthday, the Reverend Ian R.K. Paisley. Ian Richard Kyle Paisley. Those were humble beginnings. And nobody in that day could have dreamed what God was going to do in the years subsequent to that date. Now, some of you may have seen video presentations. You may have read in some of the articles in the church magazines the history of the denomination. If so, you will know that the real issue which sparked the separatist movement known as the Free Presbyterian Church of Ulster was the very heart of Christian belief, i.e. the gospel itself. This church was not begun as some sort of a project that would feed the ego of an individual. This church began because of a gospel stand that was made. Dr. Paisley himself wrote extensively about the history of the Free Church, how it all began. And really, the pivotal event was in 1949 when a man called George Gibson of Crossgar approached the young Ian Paisley on behalf of the committee of Crossgar Mission Hall to conduct an old-time gospel preaching campaign in the town of Crossgar. And after some prayerful consideration, the date for that mission was fixed for February 1951. Now, in order to have as commodious a meeting place as possible, the campaign committee decided to ask the Kirk Session, that's the elder board of Lasara Presbyterian Church, for the use of their church hall. Their request was unanimously granted at a meeting of the board of elders, over which the Reverend Matthew Bailey, interim moderator of Lasara, presided. The Lasara church pulpit had become vacant sometime after arrangements for the gospel mission were made. Now, on Saturday the 3rd of February 1951, a march of witness was arranged prior to the commencement of the mission. This was to make it known. Remember, 1951 is long before the days of internet. They didn't have radio access. So to make the mission public, they had a march of witness. They carried gospel texts. They made it known that there was going to be, over the next number of weeks, gospel preaching for an extended period. But when that march of witness reached the church hall, they found that the building was closed and locked. The decision to shut the doors of the church hall was taken 1.5 hours before the first meeting of the mission was to commence. That's a lot of notice. The Down Presbytery, that is the body that had jurisdiction over the Lasara Presbyterian Church, County Down Presbytery, they called a special meeting of the Kirk Session, the Board of Elders, that afternoon, and dictated that the church hall should not be granted for the gospel campaign, and that the Reverend Paisley and those who were with him, including their own church members, were to be kept outside in the pouring rain. Two elders, Mr. Hugh James Adams and Mr. George Gibson, refused to obey that ruling, and they were unceremoniously suspended immediately by the presbytery. Now, the large crowd who had gathered for the March of Witness joined in protest against the action of the Down Presbytery. They were shocked, they were righteously angry, that professedly evangelical Presbyterian ministers of Down Presbytery should take such a high-handed action against them and refuse to have the gospel preached in their church hall. So they made their way to the Crossgar Mission Hall, and they thronged that little building. And a protest against the presbytery's dictatorial attitude was unanimously passed. The meeting was addressed by Mr. Hugh James Adams and Mr. Gibson, the two suspended elders, and it was also agreed that the mission should now take place in the mission hall instead. The mission commenced the next evening, February 4th. It continued until the 25th of February. And God worked mightily through the evangelist, Dr. Paisley. And some 94 people profess faith in Christ. Think of that. 94 people were counseled about salvation. Those were great days. And the Lord was putting his seal of approval, I believe, on what was about to happen. Now, the Down Presbytery used every dirty trick in the book to oust the evangelicals out of the Lasara Presbyterian Church. They called a meeting of the congregation on the 5th of February in order to revise the membership list, the poll list, it was called. Of course, this was contrary to church law, contrary to their own Presbyterian code, but they were determined to prevent the more spiritual members of that congregation issuing a call to an evangelical minister. That's what was believed to be behind it. Now, Mr. Gibson, one of the elders who had been suspended, wrote a letter of protest and warning, which was read to the meeting by Mr. James Morrison, the clerk of Lasara Kirk Session, the Board of Elders, in which he denounced the presbytery's action and warned them of the outcome if they continued in their folly. Now, he received a lengthy and convoluted reply from Reverend Bailey, the convener of the vacancy, in which he dug himself deeper and deeper into the mire, according to Mr. Paisley. The anti-evangelical and dictatorial actions of Down Presbytery caused a lot of heart-searching amongst the evangelical members of the congregation. And as the mission continued through February, conferences were held. Prolonged seasons of prayer were engaged in. And the face of God was earnestly sought for grace and wisdom to know and to do His will moving forward. People were rightly grieved that the gospel had been banned There had been a violation of their church law, a feeble explanation given by the Reverend Bailey in regard to his actions. And it just showed the people the depths to which that presbytery was prepared to sink in order to thwart the wishes of the majority of the evangelicals in La Sarre Church. Now you have to understand, at this time, the 24-year-old Paisley was minister of a small mission church in Belfast on the Ravenhill Road, called Ravenhill Evangelical Mission Church. That church itself had been a separatist work that had had its own history of controversy and standing for the truth. But there was a special day of prayer and fasting held in that little church. And at the conclusion, it seemed that the way of God was now being made plain. And the brethren who were there knew that God had called them to tread where the saints of God had trod throughout history, outside the camp, and going forth unto him without that camp, bearing his reproach. It's true that there were men who were fighting their own personal battles at that time, because it's not easy to leave the church of your fathers. It's not easy to leave a church that you've been involved in for many, many years, sometimes decades. But the Lord gave the victory to those men. They were united in their purpose after that time of prayer and fasting. And it was decided that they were going to form a new denomination. So a public meeting was held in Crossgar on the Lord's Day, the 11th of March, 1951. And an announcement was made concerning the formation and constitution of the Free Presbyterian Church of Ulster. A copy of that manifesto was sent to all the members of La Sarre congregation, and also to the ministers of the Down Presbytery. And in it, it set forth in clearly understood language the reasons for the secession from the church which had betrayed them. And they gave notice that a congregation of the Free Presbyterian Church of Ulster was going to be formed in Crossgar on Saturday, 17th of March, 1951, in the Killalay Street Mission Hall, the little hall with a tin roof. This hall was extensively renovated to serve as a temporary place of worship. Five members of the Elder Board, the La Sarre Session, were installed as the first session of the new church. And the first services and Sunday school were held on Lord's Day, the 18th of March, 1951. And the names of the five session members were James Morrison, William Miscampbell, Hugh James Adams, Cecil Harvey, and George K. Gibson. Another was added to them, Mr. William Emerson. The Reverend George Steers of the Presbyterian Church of South America, who was ordained to the ministry in Rio Grande del Norte in May 1935, was actually inducted as minister pro tem of the new congregation. He stepped in to fill that breach. Mr. Paisley ended his sermon at the opening of that new church on the 17th of March with these words, quote, "Just as the Free Church of Scotland grew in strength till it was almost as large as the church it left, so I believe that this church, with the blessing of God, will go forward till all Ulster rings with its teaching." Unquote. Now, shortly afterwards, Mr. Paisley's own congregation, the Ravenhill Evangelical Mission Church, became Ravenhill Free Presbyterian Church. So isn't that interesting? His congregation was not the first in the denomination. And that's something that a lot of the enemies of the church have made great play on, that Paisley formed his own church. The church in Crossgar was in place before his own congregation came into the church. But then calls started to come in from all over the country, and eventually from across the world, for new congregations to join with us. Now, I know that many churches have an illustrious history. There are churches that were formed in history for various reasons. If you look at the history of the Church of Scotland, it was riven with many secessions, some that were for good reasons, others that seemed, and seem today, more trivial. But at the heart of the issue, the origin of the Free Presbyterian Church was the gospel. That was at the heart of things. The church came into being because some folks wanted to make a stand for the preaching of the glorious gospel of Christ. And what better reason could you have for deciding to pull out of a church and to form a new church but the gospel itself? Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 2, I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified. It's a shame that many today, even supposed believers, are not willing to take a similar stand for the gospel. There are people who will hang on in dead and moribund churches to the bitter end because grandma and grandpa are buried in the churchyard, or there's a pew inside the church that has the name of their parents on it. No doubt in Ulster in 1951 there was a need for a strong and separatist gospel preaching movement. And God did bless in those early days, and within months there were four congregations in the Free Presbyterian Presbytery. Those churches were Cabra, which was near Ballymoney, where eventually the Reverend Alan Cairns ministered, which is now Hebron Free Presbyterian Church. Risharkin, also in County Antrim. The Ravenhill Free Presbyterian Church, of course, which had been Ravenhill Evangelical Church, Mr. Fraser's own congregation, now known as the Martyrs Memorial Free Presbyterian Church. And eventually then the church in Crossgar, along with those three churches, was joined by the Mount Marion congregation in 1952. And so it went on. Now, the growth in the church was not large at the beginning. And people tend to forget that. Even among Free Presbyterians, there's the thought that this was a constant revival movement from 1951 right through to the present day. That is not so. There was a period of consolidation, and perhaps we will speak further of that later on. But the fact of the matter is that when you have a church which is a separatist church, and that's a term that we use deliberately, a separatist church. What does that mean? A church that believes in secession from ecclesiastical apostasy. A church that takes seriously the words of 2 Corinthians chapter 6, where the Bible says, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? All very good questions. I could pose the question to Irish Presbyterian ministers even today. What fellowship does an evangelical minister have with a man who doesn't even believe the Bible? What fellowship does a Bible Protestant preacher have with another minister in the church who's willing to have a priest occupy his pulpit? Because that's the situation in the Irish Presbyterian Church. Whether people like that or not, it's a mongrel church. You have men who sit on the same presbytery, some of whom are evangelicals, some of whom are not. It was well known in Northern Ireland, even up until recent years, that there was a kind of an unspoken agreement that one moderator would serve a period of time who would be more of a soft soaping, not quite evangelical, who was quite happy to go along with the other mainline churches in putting out public statements, etc. Willing to stand for photo ops with the Methodist head, with the head of the Church of Ireland, the Anglicans, and with the head of the Roman Catholic Church. But then at the next presbytery, the next General Assembly, they would vote in a more evangelical man. So that would be throwing a bone to those in the church who are of that mind. What sort of a church is that? Now, the Irish Presbyterian Church, let me just remind you, was a revival church. In 1859, a great awakening occurred in my home country, in Ulster, in which that church was to the fore and was greatly used of God. There were two men from that church who were sent on a mission of inquiry to New York City in 1858 because they'd heard that revival had broken out in New York. In the Fulton Street prayer meeting, which was started by a businessman on the street, those two men, those ministers, came back to their General Assembly in Ulster, to the Presbyterian Church. They were referred to by the ungodly press at the time as gems of revival imported from America. Because those men had come here, their hearts were so stirred by what they witnessed in New York City that when they went back to Ulster, they were like two balls of fire that went around the country spreading the gospel and spreading the news of revival like wildfire. And there was a mighty awakening that took place at that time. And the Irish Presbyterian Church was to the fore. But as happens in churches, apostasy crept in. Heresy was upheld. Within some 67 years of the 1859 revival, the Irish Presbyterian Church had exonerated a man who believed that the Lord Jesus Christ was an illegitimate son, who did not believe in substitutionary atonement, who actually attacked the doctrine of justification by faith alone through the blood of Christ. But the stand of our denomination from its very outset in 1951 was vindicated. The church was small in its beginnings, but God blessed it. A lot of people were not willing to separate from the Irish Presbyterian Church. They were comfortable in that church, especially if their own minister was an evangelical. But we know that little is much when God is in it. And so God blessed this fledgling denomination. There's a lot more I could say about the Free Church and its origins, but I don't have time to do that. But I want to speak a little about the Free Presbyterian Church and its opposition. And I want to look at it from two angles. First of all, the opposition from apostasy toward the Free Presbyterian Church, and then the opposition of the Free Presbyterian Church toward the apostasy, because this is a battle. This is a two-way battle. So we think about opposition toward the church from the apostasy. Now, obviously, there was opposition from the start. Fierce opposition to this separated church from several quarters. There was opposition politically. You might say, well, what would politicians be worried about a church for? Well, if you could believe it, in Northern Ireland, a lot of those who were involved in political life belonged to the Irish Presbyterian Church. And so both in the country as a whole and at local government level, in local municipalities, there was opposition to the church. For example, certain open-air meetings were banned. The Reverend John Douglas, who is our minister in Lisburn, he's really a minister emeritus, he's still preaching, but he's not the minister of Lisburn per se, but he's looked upon still affectionately as the minister of Lisburn in his 88th year, I believe he is. Dr. Douglas was taken to court and fined for preaching the gospel in the open air. Can you imagine? Just for preaching the gospel. Not preaching politics, preaching the gospel. Three of our ministers were imprisoned. Dr. Paisley, Reverend John Wiley, and the Reverend Ivan Foster. Why were they imprisoned? Because they joined in a religious protest outside the Presbyterian General Assembly. I was a 7-year-old at that protest, along with my parents. I remember the march that we held from our little church down to the city centre. The march was attacked by Irish Republicans, Roman Catholic mob, with iron bars, with pieces of sidewalk, and all manner of different missiles used against the march. And the march had approval from the authorities. But when we got down to the General Assembly, in the street alongside, the police threw a cordon across the street, stopping the march from proceeding, even though the route had been pre-approved. And because they were now stopped on the street, Dr. Paisley and the other two ministers, who were alleged to be the ringleaders of that protest, were charged with leading an unlawful assembly. One of the policemen at the court gave evidence against Reverend Wiley. John Wiley was a character. If you'd known Mr. Wiley, we used to say he would make a cat laugh. He was a very funny man. He was in the court, and this high-ranking police officer said, and I quote, "I didn't see Mr. Wiley doing anything. I didn't hear him saying anything. I just saw his lips moving." That's a verbatim quote. Mr. Wiley said later, he got 3 months in Crumlin Road, Her Majesty's prison, for moving his lips. He said, "I was ever so thankful I didn't have whooping cough or I would have got life." This was a religious protest, and our ministers were willing to go to jail. But you know what happened? That backfired on the authorities. Because there became, in the country, this interest. What's going on? Who are these ministers? What do they stand for? What do they believe? There was opposition, politically. Local councils refused planning applications from some of our churches. They often refused to sell land to our churches. Why? Because there's a price to be paid when you take a strong stand for the Lord. You say, well, that must be a strange place, Ulster. Very, very draconian measures taken there. Well, in Toronto, Canada, a building that Reverend McClelland and his congregation were interested in buying was bulldozed. It was razed to the ground, supposedly to make way for a tennis court. A tennis court that was never built. Because in reality, that was done to keep the congregation in Toronto from buying that property. Opposition politically, opposition ecclesiastically. You know, at the beginning there were many who opposed this new denomination. There's a church in Ireland called the Non-Subscribing Presbyterian Church. And if ever there was a misnomer, that's it. They may be non-subscribing, but they're not Presbyterian. They call themselves that because they refuse to subscribe to the Westminster Confession of Faith and the Westminster Standards. We call them the Unitarian Church. They don't believe in the Trinity. They don't believe in hell. We used to say, one God, no devil, and 20 shillings to the pound was their creed. In other words, just do your best, pay your way. You don't have to worry about going to hell, and there is no Trinity. The Unitarian Church, they attacked the church that was formed. They had their own church magazine in which an article was written entitled "The Rise of the Ranters." And in that article, that church magazine predicted that the new Free Presbyterian Church would fizzle out in no time. Some years after that, a census was taken in Ulster, and the membership of the Free Presbyterian Church was far larger than the Unitarians in Ulster. Now, there were ministers in various areas that publicly opposed the work of the Free Church. One man who left his congregation to join our Risharkin congregation had an altercation with his former minister. His former minister was an evil man and actually punched that man and knocked his teeth out. Not exactly fitting in with what the scripture says about not a brawler. The Drumrea Presbyterian minister who punched Alexander Macaulay, Sandy Macaulay as we called him. Apostates don't like the gospel. You just have to read 1 Kings chapter 22 to see what happened there. Whenever there's a man, a faithful man of God called Micaiah, and Ahab the king said, there's one man who will speak the truth. His name is Micaiah, but I hate him, for he doth not prophesy good concerning me, but evil. The apostates don't like the gospel, and they don't like separatist churches being formed. Opposition politically, opposition ecclesiastically, opposition socially. Have you ever lost friends over the church that you attend? If you're a businessman, how would you feel if your business was boycotted by people because of the church that you belong to? That happened in towns and villages in Ulster, where people who used to shop in certain stores that were now owned by Free Presbyterian men stopped shopping there. Newspapers in their columns criticized and mocked the small denomination. I remember it well as a child. Dr. Paisley used to read out all the time stuff that was written in the Belfast Telegraph, the Belfast Newsletter, mocking the church. People who attended Free Presbyterian churches were ostracized by their neighbours. Can you imagine? Just because you belong to a certain church, people stopped speaking to them. Farmers who would go to market, they could tell you. Men that used to talk to them at the mart when they were buying and selling cattle, turned the other direction, wouldn't even look at them, wouldn't even speak to them. They would pass them in their cars or on the tractor and would turn the other way, wouldn't even look toward them. Why? Because they were Paisleyites now. They joined this new church. When I was in school, kids used to be asked what denominational affiliation they had. And when children would answer the question what church they belonged to, there was never any comment until somebody like me said, I'm Free Presbyterian. And you could actually hear the kids hissing in the room. That was my experience. I hated people. Say, well, that's because of Paisley's political... No, it was not always because of Dr. Paisley's political stance. It was often part of it. But the fact of the matter is that Free Presbyterians in certain instances were refused even employment because of their association with the church, and there was intimidation. We don't live in days like that, but I wonder what our reaction would be. I wonder how faithful we would be if there was that kind of opposition toward us. Opposition toward the Free Presbyterian Church from the apostasy. What about opposition of the Free Presbyterian Church toward the apostasy? I say this denomination is a gospel preaching church, and it is. But our church is also noted for what it says on the front of our booklet that introduces the denomination, separated unto the gospel. Separated unto the gospel. The church was noted from its commencement and is still noted for it today, having a strong voice against ecumenism. That is the Romeward trend of churches. Those who are trying to have rapprochement, détente as they often call it, with the Roman Catholic Church. Those who want to have a soft voice against Romanism and charismatism because of the church's opposition to these things. There has been great reproach. I am set for the defense of the gospel, the Apostle Paul said. Oh yes, he said, we preach Christ crucified. But he also said, you'll read it in the first chapter of Philippians, I am set for the defense of the gospel. And that is a great thing, to be willing to stand publicly against departure from the faith. Because that's what the word apostasy means. Departure from the faith. Look at Ephesians 5 verse 11. It says there, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them." What does that mean? Reprove them. Well, it means speak against what they're doing. It means point out their errors. And that is the job of the church. It's not just to preach Christ and Him crucified, but it is to reprove and to rebuke apostasy and departure from the faith. We must call it out. And that's not popular. But we believe as a church, we always have done, in taking a militant stand. And when I say militant, I don't mean to imply any sort of association with the weapons of physical warfare. When I say militant, I mean taking the stand that old Talmage Spence used to call militant but magnificent. That is publicly drawing attention to evil. The Romeward March. I often think, I wonder what some churches would have done, how much earlier they would have gone into apostasy if it hadn't been for the stand that was taken by men like Dr. Paisley and Mr. Foster. They would draw attention to evil publicly. When Billy Graham was being hailed as a wonderful evangelical messiah on every hand, including on his visits to the UK, including on his visits to Belfast, my home city, people like Dr. Paisley would call out his compromise with the Church of Rome. And time has vindicated that stand. We are a Protestant church. And that's a word that has become a dirty word with many. Protestant. But it means literally a witness for the truth. It's not a dirty word. We are witnesses for the truth. And we do protest against false doctrine. And if apostasy exists, and it does, we must resist it with all our might. Even if it means standing in public to condemn it. And maybe give out leaflets against those who are preaching error. The Free Presbyterian Church has always believed in Jude verse 3. That we must, quote, earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints. We must contend for the faith. Stand up for the truth. You know, it's interesting to me today that there are many, because they know it's popular in a lot of churches, they're willing to stand against the awful scourge of abortion. And I'm with them on that. I agree. We should stand against the social evils of the day. But some of those same men who will make pronouncements about abortion will say nothing when it comes to the Church of Rome. When it comes to pronouncements by the Pope on this, that or the other matter, they're strangely silent. They never expose it. They never speak against it. I've had it said to me, you know, the church would be a lot bigger, wouldn't it, if you didn't take this militant stand against apostasy? Probably. Most likely. But would it be at the price of having Ichabod written over the church? The glory has departed. The years of the history of the Free Church have been years of great opposition. Many of those protests have been very effective. Because it hasn't been just a case of, well, we're against this and we're against that and we're against the other thing. It's what we're for. It's who we stand for. It's whose gospel that we're seeking to defend. You may have read about the Covenanters of Scotland. Those were men who really suffered for the faith. One of them, Samuel Rutherford, once said, "We dare not give one hair's breadth of God's truth away, for it is not ours to give, but God's." It's God's truth. And it matters. It really matters. And my prayer for the Free Presbyterian Church is that The great apostasy of the day will always be opposed to us. And we will always be opposed to what they're all about. May the Lord give us strength to do that. The Free Presbyterian Church is far from perfect. And I said at the beginning I wasn't interested in having a back-slapping exercise, patting ourselves on the back, oh what good boys we are, like Tom Thumb who pulled the plum out of the pie. The church is not perfect. There is no perfect church on the earth. If you're looking for one, as the man said, as soon as you find it, it'll become imperfect because you're in it. We're all imperfect. But we're part of a work that the Lord started. We're part of a work that I still believe the Lord is in. Yes, we need to see an awakening. Yes, we need to see revival. Yes, we need to see ground taken from the enemy. And I don't always understand what the Lord is doing. And why there are not more that are willing to rally to the standard. But nonetheless, I can only speak personally and say where I stood at the beginning of my Christian life and at the beginning of my ministry is where I still stand today. I still preach the same things that I ever preached. If there's been a change, as God is my witness, it isn't in me. I still believe what I've always believed from this book. And as long as the Free Presbyterian Church continues to stand for this book, then I'll be standing alongside it. When it starts to depart from this book, and men begin to move away from this book, then I'll be moving away from the church. That's the way it is. May the Lord bless our church. May the Lord bless every faithful Bible-believing church. Every church that stands where we seek to stand, which is four square on the scriptures. May the Lord bless His servants as they continue to not only make Christ known to men, but also expose error as it is preached and taught by false teachers. May the Lord give us grace to stand for Him. The Lord willing, we're going to continue this evening by looking at some further aspects of the work of God and with a view to the future. Because I've entitled this message, A 70-Year Legacy. And a legacy is something that's left behind, something that's left to you. Well, what is that legacy? Well, it's the gospel. It's the truth of God. It's the Bible. And I trust that the Lord will help us to move forward with our Bibles in hand, with the Word of God in our mouths, on our knees in prayer for the work, and seeing the Lord accomplish His purposes in our lives and in the world at large. May God grant us His blessing for His name's sake.